another episode of Behind the Vinyl with Darren and Nicholas.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Vinyl. This week we've got Mats Levine joining us and talking about the classic Black Sabbath record, Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. Great to have Mats on the show. Everyone go and check out his latest project, Prince Svart. The album is out now. The album is amazing. And do yourself a favor and go and purchase your copy. Get a physical copy of the vinyl. It's absolutely amazing. As he talks a little bit about it in this, could have talked to Mats for hours. You know, really wanted to talk to him a little bit about Yngwie and Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Candlemass, and other things that he's had on. But of course, this show was all about talking about Black Sabbath, and he kind of gave us a great little insight into his love for Sabbath and definitely for this record. So check it out. Hope you enjoy. I'm sure you will. And thanks to Mats, and we will see you guys soon. Alrighty, guys, we're back. Another episode of Behind the Vinyl. This is going to be a fun one. Talking Black Sabbath, Sabbath Bloody Sabbath with Mats Levine. Hey, man, how are you?
I'm fine, man. Fine. And you?
Good, good. It's quite crazy. We've done so many of these, and yet you're sitting in the same town of us, and we still, this is the first time we've done the show with you.
Yeah. That's the way it is, you know. you just got to roll with it.
You got to roll with it. And thanks for picking such a great record. Sabbath Bloody Sabbath is a monster.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in one sense, it's like when you're supposed to pick an album, you want to pick something that might be a bit odd or special or whatever. But, you know, that album to me is, you know, I can't avoid just saying that that was one of the cornerstones of my upbringing when I was a kid, you know. So, yeah.
Would you say Sabbath as a whole was one of your cornerstones, one of your main influences?
Yeah. The funny thing is that I have two brothers, and the eldest of my brothers, he had like a Tandberg old tape machine, you know. So he had both vinyl, but he had a lot of albums on tape as well. And he transferred those to cassette tapes to me when I was a kid, when I was 6-7 years old. So I got all the Sabbath albums up until Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, I got on cassette tape from him because I didn't have them physically on vinyl.
Yeah.
But all the Deep Purple albums I had on vinyl for some reason. I don't know. I just wanted them on vinyl. So
yeah.
So Deep Purple and Black Sabbath, those were the two bands that I listened a lot to, but on different mediums, basically. And then when I was like 9, 10, 11, I started listening to Sparks, Came Out of My House, and Sweet Fanny Adams with Sweet. And then my other brother, he had all the Lou Reed and David Bowie and Supertramp and all the other stuff, you know. Uh-huh. But my eldest brother, he brought me into Black Sabbath and Deep Purple.
Yeah. Nice.
Speaking of David Bowie, I just learned yesterday, Rebel Rebel, you know, the classic guitar lick.
Yeah.
That's actually David Bowie. I never realized it was actually David Bowie playing that lick.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know. I thought it was Mick Ronson.
I always thought it was Mick Ronson, but it was actually David Bowie played it on the album. It's David Bowie. He wrote it and played it on the album.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah, because wasn't it true as well that, you know, I listened a lot to Switch when I grew up, and they had a song called Blockbuster.
Right, yeah.
A Blockbuster and Rebel Rouser sounds like the same song. And someone told me that they were actually released very close to each other, those two songs. And they're so... Dunk, 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 da, da, dunk, you better beware, da, 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 you better take care, you know. It's the same riff, it's really weird.
That whole cross-pollination back then was, again, a little bit more natural, I think, you know.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah, a lot of Sweet stuff, actually. You could hear the Richie Blackmore Deep Purple influence on some of the Sweet riffs, because Andy Smith was probably a fan of Purple, I would assume.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So, Black Sabbath over Purple, or do you think it was equally running through in your youth?
Well, I think where I grew up outside of Gothenburg, a lot of people saw Deep Purple as the gods. Deep Purple was like, you know, for some reason, Deep Purple was just huge. And to all of us in my neighborhood that listened to hard rock, Purple were number one. You know, it just... And that was the first concert I saw as well in 75. It was Purple.
Mm.
Black Sabbath, I just loved Black Sabbath as well. But Purple was number one for me at the time. Yeah.
Gotcha. Where did you see Deep Purple? Was that at Scandinavian?
Scandinavian, yeah. Scandinavian, 75. It was actually on the Stormbringer tour. And I know that today I know that Blackmore, he had already recorded the first Rainbow album. Right. But he... So mentally, he kind of had already quit Purple, but he did this. He did this last European tour. That's the one I saw before he actually quit. So
cool.
Yeah. So I remember me and my two friends, we had to walk out in the middle of Space Trucking, the extra number, the last number, because my friend's mom was picking us up at 9:30 or something.
That's such a classic.
Yeah, it's a classic. So I actually have two memories from that show. And the first memory is when they start, I remember, oh, wow, they got pink smoke. I thought the smoke was pink. Of course, it wasn't. It was just like, you know, the light. But and then I remember looking at David Coverdale when they did Space Trucking, when I walked down the stairs and I looked at him and like, oh, yeah, we got to go. You know. So those are the two memories I got from that show. But we were happy, and I listened so much to Stormbringer and to Burn and Made in Japan, those three albums.
I am the world that finds you.
When did you start singing yourself?
Pretty late. I played the mandolin and the violin when I was a kid. Yep. When I was like 10, 11, 12. And I played a lot of sports. I played a lot of tennis and stuff. So I was like, I listened to a lot of music, but I never played in a band or anything. And I didn't have anyone in my family that actually played an instrument. You know, I just had a lot of music around me, like opera and jazz, but you know. But then when I was like 17, a friend of mine started to play drums, or tried to at least, and he asked me if I could sing, because he always heard me whistling and knowing all the lyrics to stuff and shit. So I was like, oh yeah, that could be fun. So that's, so I started pretty late. I started that one. I was in my first band when I was around 17. Yeah, a lot of my friends, at least up here in Stockholm, I mean, they started playing guitar when they were like 10 or 9, or, you know, started playing in bands when they were like 11, 12. So I was a bit of a late bloomer. I mean, my first album was Swedish Rod again in 1989. I was 25 at the time, or 24 at the time. So.
Right.
So that was pretty late compared to my friends, I guess.
Yeah. Well, better late than never.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what was the first gig you went to, Nicholas? I can't remember.
The first gig was Saxon in 85.
Oh. But
also, yeah, Innocence is No Excuse tour, and I loved it. And I bought the tour program, but then I lost it. I think I put it down on my seat.
Oh. And,
everybody was standing up, so I was standing up as well. And I was 14 years old. That was my first show. And then I totally forgot about it. And when the show was over, it was gone. Somebody took it.
Oh, wow.
But talking about late bloomers, because I mean, both Deep Purple and Black Sabbath, I was a late bloomer when it came to those bands. Because I was into, you know, I was born in 71. So I was into Kiss and AC/DC and Iron Maiden and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Very early 80s. I'm thinking 81. 82, around that time. And then I think the first time I ever heard Black Sabbath, I think that was actually Born Again from 1983.
Okay. Oh, wow. That was the first one.
Yeah. But, and I mean, I to this day, I like that album. I think it's a good album. Maybe not yeah. A Black Sabbath album, but a good album. And Gillan is a great singer. But
yeah.
I remember the first video I ever saw of Black Sabbath was the promo video for Sabbath Bloody Sabbath.
Oh,
I think it was the promo video where they're out in the woods or something.
Yeah, they're out in the woods. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember, because that was around the same time, I guess, when I went to see that first show with Saxo. So I'm 14 or maybe around 15 or something like that. I just thought the video was weird as hell. And they looked, I don't know, they looked kind of goofy. Yeah. And the music didn't fit the video. And no. The music was, I mean, they looked kind of geeky. And the music was so heavy. So I remember that being something that I really thought of and thought was really, really weird. So that's my earliest memories of Black Sabbath.
Oh wow. Well, I gotta tell you, I saw the Born Again tour in Stockholm. Oh, 83.
Nice.
Yeah, because I did the military service up here in Stockholm.
So
just because of that, I actually saw that show. And I saw the first Dio show in Stockholm with his solo band at Draken.
Yes.
In 83. And some other cool shows as well. And I remember when I saw the show for Born Again, I don't think they had released the album in Sweden yet. Because at least I hadn't heard the songs before. So, you know, so when they started to play the riff for Zero the Hero and Disturbing the Priest, I was like, whoa, this is going to be the heaviest album ever. We were like, fuck, this is awesome, you know. And then it came out and we were like, well, you know, it was like mixed emotions, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Some stuff is awesome and some stuff is you know, a bit weird. But I don't know if you guys have seen some documentary stuff about the recording of that album, but it's so many cool stories about that album. So
totally. Oh, really?
Oh, cool. I just remember reading that since they had that Stonehenge thing.
Yeah.
When they came to, I don't know if that's true or not, but the story goes that when they came to certain places where they were playing the arenas, they couldn't fit the Stonehenge replicas in through the doors, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's where the whole
Gillan, it's totally Spinal Tap. And Gillan didn't, I think, like for the first show, whatever it was, Gillan couldn't remember the lyrics to some of the Sabbath songs, so he had them taped up on the floor. But then with all the smoke and all that shit, you couldn't read anything.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of Spinal Tap as well.
Well, that happened at the first show. And someone in the audience, he was looking down in the audience when he was trying to find the lyrics. And someone screamed in the audience, oh, it's Dio.
Yes.
He was on his knees, so he was so short. You know? that's the story he says himself. I don't know if it's true. But I mean, yeah.
Well, didn't the Stonehenge, didn't they only fit that in two shows? Wasn't it two or three shows with the
I heard, I heard some story about that. The whole Stonehenge, they just had to put it at some harbor in the States or something. They just had to put it in storage.
Right.
Because nobody knows what happened to it after that. And then I remember that, because, I mean, they had like a smaller Stonehenge, I guess, when I saw them. But they still had the dwarf, you know, they had like a dwarf on stage. And he did this thing when he was falling off the Stonehenge back, you know, and they had like this thing, you know, that he just fell into. But one night, Gillan just heard a fucking scream. You know, someone was like, and the dwarf kind of missed the place where he was supposed to fall. So he was like fucking not breaking his neck, but he was really hurting. So that was Born Again. And I mean, apparently they went out to a pub. Ian Gillan and Geezer and Tony, you know. And the next morning, Ian's manager called up and said, hey, man, you can't do those things when you're getting drunk. And he was like, what do you mean? You're in Black Sabbath. Don't you remember?
Yeah.
It was like, oh, no. Well, wrong album. That's some other time.
Yes, I know. You
this band is just riddled with those stories the whole way along.
Tony
Iommi being the practical joker, and just little stupid things like spray painting Bill Ward and him nearly dying, you know. And
You know, I got to tell you just one more thing about Born Again.
Yep.
Is that because they rehearsed, at least maybe recorded as well, at Richard Branson's. Richard Branson had some kind of castle or whatever, some big place, and they rented
it.
And he had like a go-kart. You could drive go-kart. And that's where the song Trashed comes from, because Ian Gillan was drunk driving with a car and, you know, drove into, almost died actually. But anyway, he decided not to stay inside the castle. So Ian Gillan, he was like a camper. He was like camping in a tent by a small, what do you say, pod, or like a small lake thing they had, you know, with a lot of expensive fish and stuff, you know, that Richard Branson had planted or whatever. So of course, Iommi and the other guys were doing some practical joke with Gillan. So all the pyro guys put all the pyro around the tent one night when Gillan was sleeping, and they put all the pyro on, and it was just like, of course, totally scary for Gillan. He woke up, but apparently all the fish died in this pond, you know. And so that was just one of the practical jokes they did.
Well, you know.
That's what you do, I guess.
All in good fun.
That's what you do.
Thank you.
Hey, swinging back to Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. Yet another album full of excess. You know, as the story goes, they started recording. They had a success with Volume 4, and it's tour that followed. And then they go back to LA, and they just can't write. Iommi can't write. He falls into a writer's block.
I guess, I mean, there was some substance abuse as well connected to all that stuff, I guess, and they had their problems. And apparently I read somewhere, I read that they were going back to Record Plant to record there, I think.
Correct.
And they came into their, like, favorite room where they wanted to record or whatever, and Stevie Wonder had built, like, some big synthesizer thing in that room or whatever, so... They was like, oh, they were like, oh, it's not the way it was before or whatever, and, you know. But and then they went back to the UK, right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Some castle, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I think they had a little bit of a rest. I think they went into Morgan Studios, you know, just outside of London there, which is a ridiculous studio, man. Led Zeppelin recorded there, Pink Floyd recorded there. The Who, The Cure, Cat Stevens did a couple of his big records.
Cool.
And I think they did Sabotage there. Black Sabbath stayed and did Sabotage as well.
it's funny with the whole, like, especially the 70s, and as they had downloads of cocaine for that one, and then they toured, and they all had drug habits and that, well, everything. And as you said, they started out in the U.S., and it didn't work. And I think I read that Tony Iommi had a severe coke habit at that time. But it was also those times when you read about all these bands, same thing with, like, Fleetwood Mac in 77 recording Rumors. They were just not people telling, people saying, telling stories about coming into the studio, and there's like just like a mountain of cocaine. And also everybody back then thinking and not knowing that it could damage you in any way, because everybody was doing it. They didn't see, you know, there was no problems with it, blah, blah, blah. You could just do it days on end. And it was just such a different time. Not knowing, and you have this drug that makes you stay awake for days and days, and maybe you get creative, maybe you don't, but and I think it was also, you also read about it being really accepted because everybody was doing it. Everybody. It's just a strange time.
Well, I mean, I guess it was like that in the 60s as well. New drugs appeared or whatever. It was like, let's try it. It's fun or whatever. So, I mean, it's,
And it's funny because you read sometimes, I mean, you see interviews with the old ones, the ones that were around in the 60s and the 70s. And it's almost like it's sometimes it's 50-50 when it comes to the question. I mean, do you get more creative doing drugs? Because some people will say, it opens up a different... a different mind or a different gate in your head. And others will say that, no, not at all. It totally destroyed my creativity and I couldn't write at all. So,
But I mean, I guess that's totally personal. I mean, I guess we all have different chemistry in our brains, how we work. And I mean, some of us are really like focused kind of people. We need to be focused to actually work. It's like, you know, when you've been playing for a long time, you always have people around you that some people they can be so fucking drunk and they can still play really, really well. You know, it's really weird. And then you have some people they can't have like two beers. Then it doesn't work. You have to forbid them before the show. You can't drink. Yeah. You know, you can't because you sound like shit. You know? Yeah. It's so weird. It's so different from, you know, we all work a bit differently, I guess. No, but I mean, one thing that I haven't read anything, I mean, I kind of know these basic things about the recording of Sabbath, Blood, the Sabbath, but one thing that always amazed me, and the funny thing is that that's why I was drawn to the album when I was a kid as well, is that the sound of the album, the sound of the guitars is so special on this album. It's so special. It's just like, and... already when I had all those cassette tapes of Master of Reality and Paranoid and that my brother gave me, I didn't have the record to look at. So to me, all the Sabbath songs were just like, I didn't know what album they were on, you know? So because sometimes it was like mixtapes and sometimes I had the whole album on a tape. But as soon as I heard a song from Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, I knew it was Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath because... it was just something magical about it, you know, when you're a kid and something just grabs your attention and you just, wow, I just got to keep listening to this because it's magic, you know. Yep. That's the way Sabbath, Blood, the Sabbath was to me. That album to me was and still when I put it on, it's like when I hear Killing Yourself to Live, it's, you know, it's magical. I don't know what it is, but it's something.
Could it be the production? Could it be the fact that it was the band leading the way, you know?
I don't know what it is. And and it's almost like I really don't want to know what it is because I just want to keep the, you know, the magic alive, so to speak. And it's, and I'm a bit still like that. If you would ask me the running order for the Black Sabbath albums, I don't know. I don't want to know. Because I didn't know when I was a kid, and I'm still like, I don't even want to listen to the Sabbath songs and think about verse, pre-chorus, a bridge and shit like that. No, I'm not interested. It's not about that. It's like going to a movie or whatever. If those magical movies like, whatever. I don't want to think. I just want to enjoy. I just want to fucking get through the magic of it all, you know. And that's the way it is for me with those early Sabbath albums.
Yeah.
Then it's a totally different thing with the Heaven and Hell, the Mob Roots and all that, you know. It's a different band, kind of. But, I mean, those old albums to me, it's just like, it's magic. And especially Sabbath albums.
Was this the last great Sabbath record, or do you think, as in Mark One Sabbath? Yeah.
To me, it was, because I remember listening to Sabotage, and there were certain songs that I thought were awesome. You know, I loved Hold of the Sky and Symphony of the Universe, but I remember that I wasn't happy with the sound. You know, it was just something about the sound that I didn't like as much. Because I remember actually looking forward to Sabotage because I loved Sabbath, Blood of Sabbath so much. So I don't even remember if I actually bought the album or not, but I remember I was a bit disappointed. That's what I remember.
But also going back to, like, as you mentioned that, going back to like the running order of the songs, I mean, when I started out listening to music early 80s, as you, I had a lot of albums on cassettes. Because I had friends that had, I don't know, their parents were nicer or they had more money so they could buy more albums.
Yeah.
And I used to tape them. And also sometimes you had a 60-minute tape. So the album wouldn't fit on one side.
No.
So maybe two songs ended up on the other side. And just like you had that tape and you played it so many times and you were so used to that you had to flip the tape after a certain song. And that kind of stays with you. So you can listen to albums today, even though if I listen to it to CD and it just goes on from beginning to end, after a certain song, there is that thing in your brain that just goes, okay, so this is where I flip the tape and press play again. And it just stays with you. It's just weird.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the same when I recorded radio shows from Swedish radio, you know, Tio Top or something. And, you know, you listen so much to that cassette. So it was like, okay, after that status quo song, it's got to be this Cliff Richard song, or it's got to be this. Because it was like that on my tape for 10 years because I was just listening to that tape. It's you know how it is. So I totally relate to what you're saying with the cassette, the cassette thing. And I don't know, like in the 80s, what did you have Maxell tapes then? Cassette tape, was it Maxell?
I think so. I think that and then mid 80s I had, I don't remember, TDK?
TDK.
TDK, yeah.
Maxell was TDK,
Because when I was a kid, BASF. Yeah, when I was a kid, it was BASF. All the tapes were BASF.
Yeah. And I think I've said this before, like early on when I had to figure out that you could actually, you saw the tape was running out, then you could actually pause after a song and then you would flip it, rewind, and then record the rest of the album. You let it go through like half the song and then you flipped it while the record was playing. So I have that memory of, the last, I think it's the last song for those about to rock, AC/DC, where there's a certain chord that comes, and still to this day, that's where the tape stopped, and I had to flip the side, and it's still in my brain every time I hear that song, and it's really annoying. It's just weird.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, do you remember the Dortmund show in '83? And that was like a big thing. And I remember that was on TV, of course. I mean, it was actually like a 3-day event, but they showed it on TV like a one-nighter. And, you know, it was Ozzy and Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and everyone. And they did that on Swedish radio. So they had a broadcast on Swedish radio at the same time. But we, at my parents' house, we had the TV in the cellar, but I had my room, you know, one floor up. So I just had like a watch next to me because I was recording on my cassette, of course. So I was like, okay, it's 44 minutes. I got to run up now. I got to turn the cassette around and run down again because I didn't want to miss anything of the show. You know? It was magical times.
Yeah, it was. It was. It really was.
swinging back to the record, what's some of the key songs for you? What's some of the standout songs for you?
Well, the fun to me, it's always been "Killing Yourself to Live."
Yep.
Every time I hear "Killing Yourself to Live," I always think, "Yeah, this is my favorite Sabbath song ever." That's the only song that makes me get that reaction. So I guess that's my favorite. And I got the album next to me, so I just got to look here a little. But I think actually "Killing Yourself to Live," "A Spiral Architect."
Great track.
Yeah.
"Spiral Architect" is so cool because it reminds me, because I'm a big fan of The Who.
Right.
And, you know, the other parts, there's like a bit of The Who.
Yep.
And I'm a big fan of Electric Light Orchestra, you know, and the Rick Wakeman strings. No, it's not the Rick Wakeman strings, but I mean, the strings they arranged, it kind of reminds you of Electric Light Orchestra and stuff, you know. So I really like Spiral Architect. And then, of course, Sabbath Bloody Sabbath is a fucking awesome riff and awesome song. And I actually, already when I was a kid, I really liked Who Are You as well. I liked, you know, the Moog thing. I thought that was cool. So, now listening to it again, it's kind of funny when you listen to Looking For Today. It's such a poppy vibe to the song.
Yeah.
You know, it's really down. You know, it's like really poppy, but it's great. Because it doesn't matter. They could do it. And I guess that goes back to RC being a big fan of the Beatles and having a really good sense of good melody lines.
Which he never gets the credit for. His melody lines are so great. Always have been.
Yeah, it's the same with his solo stuff as well. Because I mean, I'm good friends with a guitar player who used to play with RC, Gus G, from Greece.
Of course, because I've
done a couple of albums with Gus, and he always told me when he played with Ozzy, he said, "Ozzy was there in the rehearsal room before us, and he left after we left." He was like, when he was professional, he was super professional, and he was like, he was awesome to work with, you know. And then you have all that other stuff, you know, but he could be very, very professional. He knew exactly what he wanted as well, and he had a really, really good sense for how he wanted the melodies to, to be. So I can only assume that he was a big part of the melody writing in Sabbath, and then of course Geezer wrote a lot of the lyrics and stuff.
I think I picked up on, because I remember you always picked up on certain lyrics and you would write them in your school books and stuff. And I remember picking up early on "Living Just for Dying," "Dying Just for You."
Yeah.
From "Sabbath by the Sabbath." I just, there's something, something special about those lyrics.
It is.
It just appealed to me.
Yeah.
And also I think that instrumental "Fluff."
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of, there's like bits and pieces of it that's kind of Pink Floyd-ish.
Yeah, or absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, I think, I like that song as well, because that was one of the first songs that you could actually play on guitar yourself, because it was very easy.
Right.
It's like an open D chord or whatever. So it was very easy to make it. It was like, oh, it sounds like this almost, because my brother had a guitar, you know? So "Fluff" was cool. I read somewhere, it was, "Fluff" was like the nickname for a DJ, right? I read somewhere.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, because I think it was a guy. Was it his name Alan Freeman or something?
Right.
I think he was. He was like a UK DJ.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Who played? He played Sabbath on radio early on, or was a fan of them or something. So
it
was called. I think it was called Fluff. That's what I read somewhere.
Right. Isn't a fluffer? Isn't that one who takes care of the guy in between takes in a adult movie?
I didn't know.
I think it is the one that keeps him healthy, keeps him upright.
I see.
Is that a fluffer?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. I learned something new today. That's awesome.
Yes, you live and learn.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And you of course name dropped Rick Wakeman there.
He
of course played on this record.
Yeah, I read some of it because apparently Yes were recording at the same time. in the same studio, in another room, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think he was like a big, you know, he really liked Sabbath because they were like him. They were crazy and drinking and, you know, because the guys in Yes, they weren't like him, you know. So he thought the Sabbath guys were, they were awesome. You know, he could have a good time with them, and, you know, all the practical jokes and stories and stuff. So I think he enjoyed that.
Yeah. That's another thing I think about Iommi. You know, like he doesn't, people don't talk about, he was friends with everyone. You know, him and Brian May are best friends. And and those guys in Led Zeppelin are really good friends. And
Did you read about that as well, that Zeppelin were in the studio? They came there one night?
I have read that before, yeah. Yeah, that
they, because I think Bonham wanted to record the drums for... I don't know if it was by an architect. He asked if he could record the drums. He was like, "Hey, can I do a guest appearance or whatever?" But they didn't want to do it. So.
That's great. I find it funny. Back to Rick Wakeman. It kind of comes full circle. His son has been in Black Sabbath in Ozzy's band, Adam, and been in Black Sabbath for the last bunch of years.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I met him when he played with Gus and Ozzy. And he's a super nice guy as well.
Lovely, lovely guy.
Yeah, very funny. It's super, you know. Yeah. And have you seen those interviews with him and his father, with Rick, where Rick is interviewing Adam?
Haven't seen him. No.
You can find it on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
must check it out for sure.
Yeah, it's cool. So Wakeman is an old hero, of course, playing on Life on Mars. And,
you
know. Yeah.
We kind of got to wrap it up. We've got 3 minutes left and then it's going to cut us.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just want to talk quickly a bit about you. What's going on at the moment for you? You just released an album pretty recently.
Prince Svart in Swedish, yeah. So that was like actually the biggest album I've ever done, I've been part of. And that was like the goal. It was, you could thank the pandemic a bit for that, you know, because we just felt that we wanted to do something for us that was massive. So it's like a double album, 77 minutes.
Yep.
And since I was a kid, when I bought Goodbye Yellow Brick Road with Elton John, that was the first time I saw a trifold sleeve, you know, a tri-sleeve.
Yep.
When you could open up. And I always wanted to do one of those albums myself. And we've done that now with Prince Svart. So it's like a massive album. It's almost weighs 1 kilo with 180 gram vinyls and the big booklet, and you know, we just made a massive album, so I'm really happy with that. So we're actually trying to do like 20-25 shows this summer in Sweden.
Okay. And, oh, nice.
You know, like for 50 people or 100 people. So
yeah, cool.
We are booking right now, and we just hope that we can do it from June 1st, but it looks pretty promising, I guess.
Excellent. Well, man, thanks for your time. It's a pleasure.
Oh, thanks guys.
And, really thank you.
I could talk for three more hours. That I should